The following episode of Animal Airwaves Live was recorded at an earlier time. From WUFT-FM, this is Animal Airwaves Live, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. I'm so glad you could tune in here on this Friday, the 21st of May, 2021. And I'm really happy to welcome back to the program today from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Julie Levy. And the topic today, community support helps Florida animal shelters reach life-saving record. Now that already sounds like a really, really outstanding story to be reporting. And so I'm really happy to welcome Dr. Levy back to the program today. It's been a while. I'm glad to have you back on the show today.
Thank you, Dana. It's great to be here.
I think that this last year has been unprecedented in a number of ways, but I wonder if maybe many of us didn't kind of feel like, of all the things that were going on, if there wouldn't be a significant disruption to sort of the normal operation of things at animal shelters around the country, but in the state of Florida as well. And in particular, if there wouldn't just be, I didn't really have an idea of how well things would work out, but I think that so many other things went wrong this last year, it kind of would stand to reason that animal shelters would have a hard time too. But it sounds like from what I'm hearing, there was great success. Can we talk about why?
That's right, Dana. And like all other industries, animal shelters really scrambled a year ago as the pandemic was taking hold and the shutdowns occurred and shelters had to look at their services and determine what was essential, what they still needed to do and what they could hold on or ask their community to help with. And so the things that were obviously still essential were first responder kind of activities, so taking care of injured animals that were found, dealing with dangerous animals that were on the loose, or emergency situations such as people who had lost their housing or had other emergencies where they couldn't keep their pets with them, at least temporarily. So back a year ago in the spring, shelters did define what their essential services were, and then they worked very hard to reduce the number of animals that were in the shelter. Because like all of us, our workforces were decreased. People had to stay home and homeschool their kids or just shelter in place so that we could control the pandemic. And what they did was, for the first time ever, is as a national industry, appealed to the community to come and help, to foster animals temporarily or to adopt animals permanently. And that resulted in a drastic decrease in the number of animals that were just waiting in shelters.
Yeah, okay, because nationwide, I mean, there are millions of animals in shelters probably waiting to be adopted. And, you know, in Florida, there are many, many animals in shelters at any given time waiting to have a kind of forever home. And I think that when the pandemic began and everybody kind of had to change plans, like a lot of industries almost entirely shut down, maybe unwillingly in some cases, but just the circumstances meant that business could not operate in the normal way. But there was never any doubt that animal shelters provide an essential service, if not to people, to the animals that are being sheltered there. And so the work needed to continue.
That's exactly right. The work did need to continue. We think of a lot of the services that animal shelters provide are like first responder services with emergencies for public health and safety and for animal welfare, but they had to do it under vastly constricted circumstances. So with less staff, very early on, there was no knowledge about whether pets could become infected with COVID. And so would our first responders who were encountering animals potentially have a risk from being exposed to animals. When people were going to hospitals with COVID and leaving their pets behind, our animal control officers had to go into those homes to remove the animals and then bring them to shelters. And so those of us in the university shelter medicine programs worked with CDC to develop safety guidelines for the care of animals coming from those exposed situations. until we realized later that the risk of pets becoming infected from their owners was quite low.
And that is one of the great mercies of this past year and this pandemic. In addition to children being largely unaffected by the virus, pets seemingly were not frequently infected or transmitting the disease. So that is a great mercy because, as you know, as well as anybody, and people listening to this program will understand this as well, in this year in which many, many people were at home, separated from friends or family, not able to do many of the activities which they normally would love, animals were a great source of companionship.
They certainly were, Dana, and I myself can attest that when we were working from home and teaching online, I really did enjoy the companionship of my cats and my dog. And I think for a lot of people, that was the only socialization they could get. Or they could go out and walk their dog alone safely while everything was still locked down. And so they could replace some of their normal activity with more activity with their pets.
It sounds, too, from what you're telling me, that the number of different players in this include not just the animal shelters themselves, right, which could include, you know, humane societies or could include county animal services, but also foster groups all must have kind of worked hand in hand to take care of animals during this unprecedented year. How did that cooperation kind of play out? Because there's a lot of animals we're talking about. There are different entities, and the communication must have been there the whole time to kind of like work together to take care of this problem.
There has been an increasing cooperation among different kinds of agencies, especially within geographic regions, to transfer animals between those groups and to support each other and to provide veterinary care for pet owners who might be having to give up a pet because of veterinary care. So a lot of emergency programs to support families, keeping families and pets together, and as well as quickly moving pets into a new home or, in the case of community cats, sterilizing them and putting them back in their neighborhoods. So this has been a growing theme across the country, the cooperation and facilitation of organizations working together. And then that really stepped up during COVID. I'm so proud of the way the humane community came together on many, many fronts to support both families and pets and the organizations that were really struggling. One of the bright spots of the pandemic is the emergence of a movement called the Human Animal Support Services, which has a goal to reimagine animal sheltering when we get back to a new normal post-COVID, that our animal sheltering system will be better than ever, and we won't go back to the older system of really looking at shelters as a place to warehouse animals. Now we've discovered, because of COVID, that the community is very willing to step forward and provide foster homes and medical care and social services and everything that families need to have a successful pet ownership experience. And there's a vast number of groups that have come together and signed on to this Human Animal Support Services. There's a fantastic website by that name that people can look at. And I really think we're going to see a more pet-friendly and community-focused way of sheltering animals in need rather than thinking of institutionalizing them in a building.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Dr. Levy, because it really is a reimagining of the paradigm that I think many of us imagine when we think about animal shelters. And if I could maybe offer my summary of how I think many people imagine it, and just kind of historically, because it's kind of been this way, and that is that animal shelters, maybe county animal services, if we use that as an example, it's been a place where you can go to adopt a pet, but a lot of people go to surrender a pet. Or if somebody is having some sort of hardship, maybe it's economic hardship or medical hardship, the answer has too often been give up the animal, give up the pet, and turn it into animal services. And perhaps it can be adopted out, but maybe it spends a long time there. But reimagining this system into something that allows people to continue to have relationships with these companion animals is a really worthy goal. Can you describe a little bit more how it's worked and how it's evolved?
Yeah, ironically, the whole animal sheltering system in the United States, it actually arose historically out of a public health need to eliminate rabies in dogs from the United States, which has been successfully done, and to reduce the number of free-roaming dogs that cause problems for people and for livestock. And so historically, it emerged as a kind of removal system for animals. And then as humane societies and efforts to serve animals better developed, we still drove everything to relinquishing animals to the shelter. There wasn't really any way to help people or animals without breaking up the family. And so that has some good effects. Some shelters have done amazing things for animals, but it also has separated pets and families when it wasn't necessary. So now we're taking a hard look at what can we do instead? How can we spend our money better and use our time better to serve families and pets? And so examples that come to mind are there are many people who need temporary help housing an animal. So if, for instance, someone is going into the hospital for a period of time or into rehab, physical therapy after surgery, or if they have temporary housing and security and they're staying with relatives and can't bring their pets, really what they need is just someone to care for their pets for a short time, and the hope is that they can get them back. So here our local Humane Society, North Central Florida Humane Society, has a program for emergency boarding for those situations. And one of the ways that they serve is to help victims of domestic violence who need to leave in a hurry, but often don't because they have pets they would have to leave behind. So now they can relieve them of that burden so they can do what they need to do. Also providing temporary housing for people who have medical needs or other reasons why they have to temporarily have another home for their pet. And so that can be served either in the shelters, but also the shelters are working with foster homes. So just members of the community who are willing to take in pets temporarily and then give them back to the families. Another large reason for relinquishment is veterinary care that people cannot afford. And that may be the typical preventive care that we can help with low-cost clinics like the one at our Humane Society, or like what Operation Catnip offers for trap, neuter, return of community cats, or for the occasional accident or medical condition that arises that's expensive. And so very often, people relinquish their pets when those kinds of situations arise, and the shelter still has to provide the care for the pet and then find it a new home. So the feeling now is it would be better to provide the care for that pet and then return it to the family that loves it.
It sounds like a tremendous social good that is being done here, because it is no secret to listeners of this program that I feel that companion animals are invaluable members of many households, particularly for the elderly, for people who have some sort of medical condition that perhaps prevents them from being as mobile as maybe they formerly were, or just it's difficult for them to move around and go places. Companion animals can be a wonderful emotional connection and really cherished members of the family, as I say. It sounds to me like the community of people who work in what we have formerly thought of as just animal shelters are really working together to make it possible for people and their pets to stay together in a way that we would expect for human children, for instance, right? Like we would really be upset to think about the idea of someone who's just temporarily having a hard time, maybe economically, losing their children, right? Like that would be almost, you know, we wouldn't want to think about that. It sounds to me like we're figuring out ways to keep pets with their owners rather than just surrendering them.
That's a great analogy, Dana. And we think about how children were managed in orphanages historically, and some of those children certainly were orphans, or some were taken away from families just due to poverty and other social conditions. And we now know that that was a really horrible solution to the problem of poverty or being orphaned, and that placing children in homes is so much better for their long-term welfare and just for society. And the same is true for animal shelters. We can think of traditional sheltering as an orphanage where an animal comes into a scary place and stays for a short time or a long time, and then hopefully has a positive outcome. But the experience has to be stressful for them. And to the extent that we can avoid putting an animal in a stressful shelter situation and keeping it in a home or a foster home instead, that's really a better option.
Well, Dr. Lever, I think we're just scratching the surface of this topic, but it's a really wonderful one, and I'm glad that we're able to discuss this today. I want to remind listeners that this is Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Julie Levy, and we're talking about community support helping Florida animal shelters reach life-saving record this last year. Short break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Julie Levy, and we're talking about community support helping Florida animal shelters reach a life-saving record this past year. And as far as that goes, Dr. Levy, let's talk a little bit about this because, you know, when this whole pandemic started, I think probably few people could understand or predict how it was going to affect animals and animal shelters and so forth. But it really does sound like great strides were made, and while the number of adoptions it may have actually gone down, I understand, which stands to reason because a lot of stuff being up in the air, a lot of people had a great deal of uncertainty, and maybe many people felt like adopting an animal was maybe it wasn't the best time, or for various reasons. I mean, I understand that, you know, there's far fewer babies born around now than there would have been a couple years ago. So lots of things are kind of in flux. But the number of animals euthanized, right, which is a measure that I think that we can all appreciate in terms of its significance, actually declined substantially, like by many percent year over year, right?
Yeah, so the pandemic gave us a little bit of a silver lining in animal sheltering since fewer animals were coming into shelters and there was a lot more support for keeping pets in their home or helping owners rehome the animals themselves if they couldn't keep them. Shelters were not so overcrowded and euthanasia rates in shelters also plummeted. This is the extension of a national trend that we see across the country as well as here in Florida, where every year there's incrementally fewer animals that are taken to shelters and fewer animals that are euthanized. So that's a really exciting trend that animal welfare groups have been working very hard on many fronts to achieve. And then the pandemic, ironically, gave us a little quicker progress on that, since fewer animals were coming into shelters. And that's a gain that everybody is really hoping to hang on to as shelters start to open up again. We've learned some really valuable lessons about going to the community instead of bringing animals into the shelter, and there's a lot of buy-in nationally to continue that progress. Here in Florida, we've been reducing the euthanasia rate year over year. We first collected data statewide here at the University of Florida in 2013. And at that time, about half of animals entering shelters were saved and about half were euthanized. So that was a really high euthanasia rate of hundreds of thousands of animals. And in 2020, that rate plummeted to only 12% of animals entering shelters were euthanized. We are very close in Florida to saving all of the animals that are healthy and treatable, which is our long-term goal.
I mean, that's just such astounding good news. If we can, I know that you say that you began to kind of really keep track of this information about 2013, but let's go back far further in time and talk about what the state of animal shelters were, say, a generation or so ago. I can remember when it was referred to as the dog pound, right? Or you had the dog catcher was like this to be feared sort of person. And if an animal went to a shelter, it generally meant bad news. How is there any way to understand what the euthanasia rates were back then?
Yeah, well, animal sheltering really emerged over 100 years ago in the United States, largely as a response to public health threats. And that was before spaying and neutering had any control on reproduction. So the number of animals was just overwhelming. And here in the South, where we don't have hard winters, we do see much worse animal overpopulation than in the northern states. But Florida has always been a struggle. There's a lot of reproduction, especially in cats, and they survive over the winter. And so shelters were often in the past just unable to keep up with the waves of animals that were being brought in. And residents in the community didn't have a lot of options either for the animals that they encountered, largely before spay and neuter became popular. That was something that really surged in the 1970s with spay and neuter clinics opening up and culture changing so that it was viewed that the responsible thing to do with a pet was to have it sterilized. And that caused a dramatic decrease in the 80s and 90s in the number of animals that were coming into shelters.
Right. I think that, you know, I mean, I've seen in my lifetime a tremendous change in how pets are kind of thought of. I can remember in my childhood, it was so common for someone to just say, oh, I got to let the dog out. And you'd just open the door and your dog would kind of roam freely around the neighborhood. And I'm glad that we're kind of past that. But the attitude about so many other aspects of kind of good pet ownership have changed. And so have the approaches of animal shelters. And it sounds to me like great strides are being made. But it has to be on multiple fronts. I mean, you mentioned that spaying and neutering is obviously a tremendous component of this, right? So without effective spay-neuter programs, the pet overpopulation would be so significant that no matter how many people were willing to adopt or foster pets, there would still likely be too many, right?
Absolutely. That's probably the biggest advance that we saw is that by spaying and neutering, the population that we did have was much more manageable, and not only could all of the adoptable animals find good outcomes, but also we could start having resources available to help the ones that needed rehabilitation or to raise the underage kittens up to adoption age. And we finally have that breathing room now to dig deeper into the animals that are harder to save, both financially and with the time and personnel resources that we have.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, if we can take a diversion for a second, because money is a consideration, right? I mean, we could do all kinds of things in this society if we were willing to dedicate the financial resources towards it. How has the animal shelter system been able to do more, have the resources increased over the years to allow these services to reduce incidence of euthanasia?
The gains have been just redistributing the resources that were being kind of wasted on unnecessary animal intake, holding, and euthanasia. So as those numbers come down, it frees up resources to be spent in a better way. So in the same way that closing orphanages for children freed up all of those institutional costs for better education and other support services, the same thing is happening in animal shelters. So one is just being smarter about how the money is being spent. And then also we're seeing as animal shelters become more of a symbol of success and service in communities that residents are more willing to donate. And nonprofit contributions are a huge part of solving this problem. But nobody wants to donate to an animal shelter where most of the pets don't have a happy outcome. So having that success is really feeding back on itself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. We all, I think, feel good at knowing that euthanasia incidents at animal shelters have declined so precipitously over the years, to the point where I think that reading some of the material that you sent me, something like 90% of animals in Florida that go into a shelter will leave that shelter alive, right?
That's exactly right. And now it's the cooperation across the state has been very dramatic, especially this year. For example, in the rural counties, we often see that there's less funding available for those shelters. The shelters are often very small and pretty rudimentary. And the number of animals that are coming into shelters on a per capita basis is quite high, whereas the capacity to adopt all those animals out locally may not exist. A lot of the rural counties lack spay-neuter clinics and other support that they need to have the same gains that we've seen in the urban counties. And so now we're seeing more regional collaboration so that the larger shelters in the urban counties are taking those animals in from those rural shelters and adopting them out. So that cooperation across the region is really helping the whole state move forward.
Not to make too long a diversion here, but what else can be done to kind of alleviate the kind of urban and rural divide here when it comes to animals? The number of animals that are surrendered in rural areas may not be larger just by a concrete number, but in terms of percentage, is it higher than urban areas in terms of the number of pets that are brought to animal shelters?
Yeah, it's actually astoundingly higher on a per capita basis. So we often compare animal intake and outcome based on like 1,000 residents, and that kind of levels up comparisons that we can make. And many times the urban areas might be taking in maybe 10 or 20 animals per 1,000 residents, whereas the rural counties might be taking up to 80 animals per 1,000 residents, which is just overwhelming for them. So what we're seeing more now is the development of urban centers for support that can both take in those animals for adoption and also can provide spay-neuter services and other support services that extend all the way into the rural counties.
Right. I mean, and especially here in North Central Florida, where we have a lot of rural areas, this is of significance to us as well. In the state of Florida, how many animal shelters are there? Do you know a number?
A number. Interestingly, the state doesn't keep a list of animal shelters. There's no registration or regulation of animal shelters in Florida. So it's always a bit of a hunt to find out where they all are because they kind of come and go over time. So we've been able to identify a little over 150 shelters operating currently in Florida's 67 counties.
Is it safe to say that every county has at least one?
I'm almost safe to say that. There's a few rural shelters in the Panhandle that contract out their sheltering to out-of-county shelters.
I see. Now, that must make it especially hard. Now, even if there's fewer people, the territory still needs to be covered, and that must put a strain on the animal services of the neighboring counties to whom these contracts are made. But nevertheless, I mean, these animals, if they enter shelters in rural counties, it sounds to me like part of the solution is moving these animals to the places where people live in order to get them adopted. How much of a challenge is that?
That is an increasing trend, and it's being very effective. So a good example here in Alachua County would be the Humane Society of North Central Florida, which takes in animals from quite a few counties, over 10 surrounding, and they've been a huge resource for the counties right around Alachua County, as well as being a big resource for helping to relocate animals when we have a hurricane or another disaster that impacts shelters out in the Panhandle or in distant areas. There's also a movement to transport animals up north to the northern states where there's actually a shortage of pets in shelters. I know that's hard to imagine here in Florida, there being such a thing as a shortage of pets, but that is the case up in the northern states. So large transport of cats and dogs can make their way up there through day-long transports or for flights from Florida.
Yeah, I'm just kind of trying to imagine the buses or airplanes that are full of these animals that are going off to another place to meet their new families. Well, Dr. Levy, this is the place where we're going to take one more break. And when we come back to Animal Airwaves, I think that we can maybe dispel some myths. I want to remind listeners, this is Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM. I'm Dana Hill, my guest. From the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Julie Levy. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Julie Levy, and we're talking today about how community support helps Florida animal shelters reach a life-saving record. And here, Dr. Levy, I wonder if we can maybe dispel a myth or a rumor or just speculation that perhaps some people had regarding this past year specifically and what is supposed to have happened, maybe not really happening, in terms of animals being adopted maybe early in the pandemic and then being jettisoned, right? Is it safe to say that that is not something that overall has been a significant issue?
That's true, Dana. There has been some media coverage of some rescue groups that made claims that people adopted pandemic puppies. And then as they went back to work, they returned them to the shelter. But we've been keeping a close eye on national shelter data, and we really don't see that trend either here in Florida or across the country. In fact, the number of animals that came into shelters in 2020 was decreased over the previous year. The number of adoptions in 2020 was also decreased than the previous year. And we're watching the returned adoptions. Those would be the animals that were adopted but were later brought back to a shelter. Those are also still down compared to 2019. So we're not at all concerned that people made impulsive and irresponsible decisions to adopt a pet that they're now discarding now that life is getting busy again.
Now, it isn't hard to imagine that for some people, a pet that was adopted early on in the pandemic when maybe these people had a lot of time on their hands and weren't going anywhere because maybe they work from home or, you know, for a variety of other reasons, that it's easy to almost understand how this rumor could spread because part of it seems like it could be true, right? It seems like with people going back to work increasingly that there would be maybe less time to spend with pets. But if the data just aren't bearing out the rumor or the speculation, then I mean, maybe we can just put this to bed right here and just say that that's not really something that's happening in any significant way.
It's definitely true. And I think we just have to give more credit to the community and pet adopters than people were supposing that they would be so shallow as to just temporarily have a pet that they're not bonded to. The people who adopted pets during the pandemic are just as bonded and responsible as people who adopt pets at any other time. In fact, a part of this new movement to reimagine animal sheltering to double down on that commitment that and love that people have for pets and invite them to be a bigger part of the solution of homeless pets than they've been in the past. To reduce the reliance on the animal shelter is the place that all animals need to go and look at how we can keep pets and families together. And it's really paying off where people love pets in this country and they're taking good care of them.
Yeah, here I will count myself as a household that adopted a pet last summer. We adopted a kitty, a kitten, in fact, and we're not giving her up. She's going to stay. Margaret Oliver is part of the family now. And she... She has it really good. I'll just tell everybody that. Margaret Oliver has a really sweet life. But it isn't hard to imagine that many people, particularly with dogs, are going to be facing some challenges as life kind of resumes its normal course. And I wonder if we could take a couple minutes, Dr. Levy, to just talk about adjustments that people are going to be making. Because really, for a lot of families who have been able to spend a lot of time, particularly with their dogs, who often require a good deal of attention, well, there's going to be some changes. And this can be unsettling for pets as well as people.
That's right. We are wondering, because the pandemic was unprecedented in keeping people at home and keeping children at home, homeschooling all year, is that pets have either gotten used to having their family around all the time, or if they're new pets to the family, that may be all that they know. And so there is some concern about how pets will adjust as they start spending more and more hours a day alone in the home, and whether there might be some emergence of more separation anxiety or other problems. So there are some helpful suggestions that the behavior experts have shared with us to lessen the trauma of that transition. So one would be to start establishing new patterns before being away from work all of the time. So to practice leaving the home for some short amounts of time and then gradually increase that amount of time leaving the pets behind. Also, crate training dogs so that they're comfortable being in a crate with a toy and a treat can also be helpful for keeping pets safe when you're not home. And then watching for those patterns that the pets pick up on. I also adopted a shelter pet during the pandemic. I got a little dog. I saw her picture on Facebook. She was in a Louisiana shelter, and I had to have her. And I had a bunch of friends help get her transported to me last March. And this little dog is so cued into my home life, and she knows that if I put shoes on, I'm going to go outside, and she really wants to be with me because most of the time I can take her with me when I'm shopping or going out. But that's going to change as we get back into more business as usual at UF and I'm teaching in person more. So I'm already practicing leaving the house without her for a short amount of time, doing some of my routines, like actually wearing shoes in the house again now, so that doesn't get her all wound up when she sees me putting shoes on or picking up the keys or stepping out the front door. So we're practicing on making that part of a normal routine rather than a signal that she is going to be alone. And we're practicing on longer and longer time periods where she's alone. And there's a lot that I do also to leave behind things for her to do. So she has, of course, a lot of chew toys and fluffies. And then I also work on slow dispensing treats that can occupy her. So you can get things like a rubber cone, stuff it with peanut butter, and then put that in the freezer. And it will take her hours to work her way through that food toy and keep herself entertained.
Clever. You know, with dogs, it often is a matter of kind of keeping them occupied on productive activities rather than destructive activities. Our cat, Margaret Oliver, well, you know, she'll manage to get by when we're not at home all day anymore. She could probably take it or leave it sometimes, I think, with our company. But it's good advice because I do think that it is worth considering kind of the emotional attachments that our pets have made with us over these past 14 months or so now, in which really for many, many people, pets have had our almost undivided attention, or at least, you know, they've assumed that, right, as they've kind of been at our feet all day long as we're going about our Zoom meetings and whatnot. So it's worth considering how this will affect them. And if people do have concerns or issues with their pet or questions about their pet's behavior, you know, the advice that you gave is good. And also consider maybe consulting your veterinarian, because your veterinarian may be able to offer other helpful suggestions and insights.
Yeah, veterinarians for sure have some more tools. There are expert specialist veterinarians who work in behavior. So if there's a really significant problem, your local veterinarian may refer to a behavior consultation. Veterinarians can also dispense some medications that help just provide a little bit of chill and take the edge off those transitions. There's also a great program called Fear Free. It's a certification that veterinarians and other workers can take. There's also a version for pet owners as well. And just go to fearfree.com and look for the different courses. And there's a lot of information about how to keep pets happy and healthy emotionally in the home and during visits to the vet. One thing that pet owners may be finding is right now there's a shortage of veterinary capacity to actually get in to see a veterinarian. It's partly due to a workforce shortage, also due to the fact that veterinary clinic staff have also been having to stay home either on quarantine or for homeschooling reasons. And also that they've been working on curbside service, which takes more time. So one thing to consider is if you need to see a veterinarian is make those calls early, because it may be a while before you can get an appointment with your veterinarian.
All right. Really good advice. And Dr. Levy, I wonder if we can, here towards the end of the program, maybe do a little bit of a speculation, as dangerous as speculation may be. I wonder if we can imagine what the future is going to look like for shelter medicine and for the care of animals in shelters and foster homes and so forth, as we move forward kind of out of the pandemic into more normal sort of patterns and routines. Do we anticipate more success stories like we've had this past year?
Oh, we certainly do. And that's the opportunity we have right now to reimagining animal sheltering. There will still be some services that shelters and animal control agencies really need to serve in society. So animal cruelty investigations, dealing with dangerous animals, helping sick and injured animals, and being that safety net for people who have an emergent need of some kind. So that is going to persist. But what we're also going to see is a blossoming of more of a case management approach to animals, where we work with families to find out exactly what they need to have a good relationship with their pet and to preserve those family bonds. So it might be medical care, it might be temporary boarding, it might be training and behavior resources, rental deposit assistance. There's just so many different ways that shelters and animal welfare organizations can help. What we see here in Florida as probably the biggest need we're really going to need to work on is still saving the lives of more cats. They're still euthanized in Florida shelters at almost twice the rate in dogs. So closing that gap is going to need to be a top priority for Florida shelters. So a lot of that is going to be dependent on expanding spay-neuter services for the free-roaming stray and feral community cats, because that's where most of the new kittens come from, as well as helping cats in families already.
Yeah, it sounds like you mentioned the, you know, stray and feral community cats. I was going to ask, you know, what explains the disparity in, you know, euthanasia between the dogs and cats in animal shelters? And it probably largely comes from the simple fact that, whereas by and large, dogs are not allowed to roam free these days, cats still are largely free to just kind of be out. And there are many stray and feral cats in the community. And of course, they reproduce. And those kittens wind up often in animal shelters. Margaret Oliver, my pet, is probably one example of that. She's had a very successful outcome, but that's not always the case. What more can the community do to help alleviate the problem of stray and feral cats?
Well, last year, over 300,000 pets came into Florida shelters, so it's still an enormous number, and we're going to chip away at that. But over half of those, 55%, were cats. And of the cats, over 70% came in as strays. So that unowned community cat population is really our biggest challenge and the biggest source of reproduction. It's like you say, it's different than dogs. Dogs do not, there's not a large population of free-roaming dogs that just sort of live in neighborhoods that don't have owners. Whereas in cats, there's probably as many cats just living in neighborhoods that really don't have an owner that claims them as there are that are living in homes. So that's the population we really need to double down on now. Also, in dogs, 36% of dogs last year that came into shelters were returned to their owners. So if a dog is lost and ends up in a shelter, there's a good chance it can find its way back home because of a collar or microchip or someone coming and looking. In contrast, only 3%, a tenth of that rate of cats get returned to their owner. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Cats don't usually, very often don't have collars and microchips. People don't look for their lost cats quick enough. But also many of those cats are just neighborhood cats. They don't have someone to come look for them. So that's where really beefing up our trap, neuter, return programs like Operation Catnip has and others are really going to make the difference for cats. And right now it's kitten season. Shelters are overwhelmed with kittens coming in that sometimes they're not even old enough for adoption or they are ready for adoption. And right now what people can do is go to their shelter and rescue group and adopt cats or volunteer to help. It's really needed this time of year.
Well, Dr. Levy, it has been wonderful talking to you today, especially getting some of this much needed good news. I think that we can all appreciate a positive story like the one that we've heard about today on Animal Airwaves Live. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dana. It's been a pleasure.
Julie Levy is a veterinarian at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. I want to also say thank you to Sarah Carey at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine for her help with the program. And thank you to you for listening as well. I'm Dana Hill. I hope you'll join me next time for another episode of Animal Airwaves Live. Mm-hmm.